On April 16, 2019, senior Montana Democratic Senator John Tester held a town hall meeting in the ballroom of the historic Baxter Hotel in downtown Bozeman to a standing room only crowd. After a brief report of his recent work, he took questions from the crowd, ranging from immigration, health care, the Violence Against Women Act, with particular attention to missing and murdered Indigenous women, veterans issues, particularly the high rate of suicides, wildlife and wildlands protection, climate change and the Green New Deal, as well as extricating U.S. troops from wars in the Middle East. Senator Tester is introduced by Bozeman Deputy Mayor Chris Mell.
I'm Chris Mell. I'm your deputy mayor. I'll be mayor starting in January. I want to thank Senator Tester. We would welcome anyone at the statewide office who can come in and talk to us face-to-face about what's going on, answer our questions. I ask that we be Bozeman nice. We ask all the questions we can in the hour we have, but also hear from Senator Tester, who's down at the border, what's going on there. I personally want to thank him. He's done a lot of work on the Violence Against Women Act, which is also, as we all know, we're an outdoor and recreation town, and significant work on Land and Water Conservation Fund, as well as the Rose Fund. And a place that's not in Bozeman, but is near and dear to my heart, the Blackfoot Clearwater work. So I'll let you talk about that, but thank you so much, Senator, for being here.
Well, thank you, Chris. Thank you for joining us. Chris took all my talking points, you know, I got nothing to say. Now look, I'm going to talk a little bit and then we'll open up for questions. I'll try to be as concise as I can to get to as many questions as we can over the next hour, but I really appreciate you all showing up, appreciate giving us your input. I've got a number of staffers here, so that if we get to a point where you need us to help you with some agency or something that's going on in the federal government, we're more than happy to take that on. We'll have to get your name and all that kind of stuff that we formally have to do. But it is a pleasure to be here. The deputy mayor brought it up on what's going on, so I'll just start with what's going on from a conservation standpoint in Washington, D.C. We've got some good news, and oftentimes Washington, D.C. doesn't work together, but here about a month, 6 weeks ago, we worked together to get permanent reauthorization for the Land and Water Conservation Fund. Now, this is a program that's been around for 50 years. You guys in the Gallatin know it's been utilized here extensively, not only for access to our public lands, but also for building parks and just doing a lot of good things in communities with quality of life. Well, it was set up in the mid-60s and really made real in the 70s, and it had always been reauthorized until 2015. It never got reauthorized. And then about a year and a half ago, it never got reauthorized again. So a bipartisan group of senators got together and said, enough of this garbage. This is too important of a conservation tool that we have to jump through these hoops, because when you reauthorize a program, there's two things that have to happen. You have to authorize it, and then you have to fund it. So we got permanent authorization of the Land and Water Conservation Fund. That's good news. Congress worked together, got something done positive. Now what we need to do is we need to get it funded. And back in the 70s, it was funded at $900 million. Those dollars were to come from offshore drilling. And so that's still where the money comes from. It's not like it comes out of the general fund specifically, but it comes from offshore dollars. And if we can get it funded, there's a lot of good projects that can be used throughout the state of Montana, throughout the West, quite frankly, in particular, but throughout the country that'll help our kids be able to enjoy the great outdoors and some of the stuff that we take for granted here in Montana will be around for them. The other thing that is a high priority is healthcare. I don't have a good news story for that other than the fact that pre-existing conditions weren't stripped away here a few months ago. That's a good thing. But we really do need to work on stuff, on policies that will help drive down healthcare costs. So we did some things with a bill called the PACE Act a bit ago that helped give the states a little more power and help businesses in particular be able to help drive down rates. But there's some things we need to do with pharmaceutical companies. There's things we need to do with programs at the federal level to make sure that they're around so local hospitals have the ability to know that those dollars that were promised are coming in. And so any ideas you have on healthcare, I'd be more than happy to take those up. And as far as that goes, conservation and the great outdoors too, or anything. The last thing is, the deputy mayor talked about this, about 2 weeks ago last Monday, I returned from the southern border. I was down southern tip of Texas in McAllen, Texas. Got to see the processing center there that people have heard a lot about, where we process folks who have come across the Rio Grande and put foot on our soil and have claimed asylum, and they're processed. And it's a two-edged sword. The place I was at was very, very overpopulated. It was a building about 80 by 100 by my guess. It was clean, it didn't smell, but there was way too many people in that big of a space. So the issue of processing folks on the southern border is a real issue, and there's some things we can do about that, but the truth is it also has to happen in a bipartisan way. I also got to see where the wall was being built, and where I saw it, it was being built on top of a levee that in some cases was nearly a mile away from the Rio Grande River. I will tell you from a drug standpoint, and we do have a drug problem coming across the border, most of it through the ports. From a drug standpoint, the wall will probably help. From an immigration standpoint, I think it's going to create more problems than it's going to solve. So you say, why? Because there's going to be an area between the Rio Grande and that wall, some 1.1 million acres in Texas alone, that will effectively become a no man's land. Still be U.S. soil. I don't think anybody's in favor of ceding it to Mexico. It'll still be U.S. soil. So when people come across, it's going to be the same issue of asylum. The problem is there's very valuable land in that area, land where they raise a lot of produce, a lot of high-value crops. And the farmers that I talked to down there were very, very concerned that they would not be able to have access to workers to be able to work on that side of the wall because law enforcement would be at the wall. So that's another issue. We also went to the ports, got to see the port where mostly cars were coming. In fact, it was the port where the cars come through and pedestrian traffic come through. They've got incredible technology and the folks are doing a great job. And then we got to see the port where the trucks are coming through, $1 billion a day in an economy between the border of Mexico and the United States. And there were, there was probably 150 trucks there while I was there, all being inspected, not only for bugs and bad insects that could have impacts upon this country, but also for drugs. So it's a big job, but the truth is I think we've got some very, very good people in both Customs and Border Protection that are working very, very hard. That's about all I'm going to have to say before we just open it up for questions.
First of all, thank you so much for coming and being here real.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. Three things I want to name without going into great detail since we have so many.
Sure, yeah, you bet.
You named healthcare. That is of great importance to our whole extended family here, Republicans, Democrats alike, and elsewhere in the country, of course.
Yeah.
We all believe in healthcare for everyone. So I wonder what you think of a step-by-step process, something like Tim Kaine is proposing, Medicare for More, I believe, is what he's calling it. But ultimately, we want everyone to be able to go to the doctor.
Yeah.
So that's my number one.
Okay.
Number two, climate change.
Yes.
It's real. Got it. Deal with it by starting by acknowledging it, and then we know we're at a tipping point past it that we probably can't undo it totally, but we have to cope with it now, adjust to it. So anything you can tell us about efforts in that department. Third thing is just, I mean, my heart will explode if I don't say to you, there simply cannot be any more children separated from families, no matter what.
We'll go in reverse order, and if I don't get it done, you can stand up and say you didn't ask that question. I'll get to it. I'll do my best. First of all, I don't think there's any appetite by anybody in Congress, and I shouldn't say that because there might be a few, to separate kids from their families. And quite frankly, I met with some of the administration folks last week. I met with Mulvaney and the new acting secretary, DJ McElveen, and I asked McElveen straight up, is this going to be part of the policy as if you as acting director of DHS? He said, absolutely not. So I don't think there's any appetite to do it. It's about as un-American as you can get. Climate change, you're right. And the truth is that you're also right in saying that there's things happen that we can't undo. We are where we are. The reason climate change is so difficult is anything we do right now. Probably my kids will be my age or older by the time they see the benefits of it. But nonetheless, if you take a look at the response that this country's had to do with disasters around this country, it is fiscally irresponsible to do nothing on climate change. We've got tornadoes, we get floods, we get, you name it, locusts. I mean, everything out there comes across the line and it costs money and it has impacts. I felt it on my farm and I know that folks feel it every day. So what do you do about it? Well, I think it all goes with research. It goes with research on new ways for energy. And it goes for ways that we can burn coal cleaner, as clean as we possibly can. It goes to research into battery technology so that we can store wind energy and utilize it during peak times. All those things are important. And without that research and development moving forward, I think we're going to continue to see more and more disasters and more things moving forward. Healthcare in Canesville, and I don't know Canesville verbatim, but I think it probably was talking about lowering Medicare age down to 55 or allowing you to buy into Medicare. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah.
Look, I think that those are the kind of things we have to do that will be fiscally responsible to allow people to be able to continue to afford health care. I can tell you right now it is too expensive. It is just too expensive. I do believe, though, that people have to have some skin in the game when it comes to health care. Otherwise, we'll get overutilization. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And then the people that really need health care might not be able to get health care because it's being overutilized by some folks. So I think any plan that can come forward where there makes it more affordable, allows for some skin in the game by the patient, quite frankly, doctors can live with, that hospitals can live with, the nurses, that infrastructure can live with. One of the challenges going on right now that I'm very, very concerned about is we could lose that infrastructure. You're not going to lose your hospital here in Bozeman. But there are plenty of small towns around Bozeman that if we screw up, they will close or they will change their delivery system to the point where it's not recognizable. And when that happens, God help rural America. Because if you don't have access to health care and you're over the age of 50, you're in trouble. That golden hour passes pretty fast if you're in a vehicle driving to a bigger community. So we'll get this lady over here. We're going to start with the women and then we'll go to the guys.
Two things, one having to do with the wild and another having to do with women.
Yes.
And my issue on women is going to be particularly expressing gratitude to you for the attention given to what is happening with Native American women.
Yes.
As I understand it, from trying to read and listen to those who are much more than I am, and working with a task force and trying to work with a task force here at MSU, combating sex trafficking and other trafficking, some of the complications having to do with Native American women have to do with land jurisdiction.
Yes.
And as I understand it, this division of land jurisdiction makes it particularly difficult to follow up, follow through, find out about anything that's happening with the Native American women. Is there anything anyone on the street, any of us can do to write to ask for pressure on to fix that so that it's easier? I mean, it's still horrific. I know a lot of the numbers, but so it's a little easier to follow through and help that situation for Native American women. And then the other part, really quickly, has to do with the wild and trying to see where there's appreciation for the sacredness, for the humanity, if you will, I don't have an animal word, of taking care of the land and the wild, particularly where we have this area that's going to become more and more overcrowded and putting pressure on the wild and the beautiful around us.
Yes. First of all, we'll start with missing and murdered Indigenous women and trafficking, sex trafficking overall. Don't kid yourself for a second. Montana is not immune from this. This is a big issue in this state. And it's about getting people to talk. Whether it's sex trafficking of anybody or whether it's dealing with Native Americans on sovereign land, it's about communication. And I will tell you that I think if one thing came in the hearing that we had back in December, I believe it was November or December, it was that the agencies looked at one another and said, we're not communicating well enough in regards to the missing and murdered Indigenous women, the BIA, the FBI, the U.S. Marshal Service, the tribes, the tribal police. All of them need to work better. They need to get cross-deputization so that they can work across those lines in a better way. I guess if I was going to recommend you to do anything, I would say rifle off a letter with your concerns to myself, to Senator Daines, and Congressman Gianforte, and then we can go off of that to send letters to the FBI, to the BIA, and I think those are the best points of contact. Look, I've visited with a lot of Native American people on this issue because it's a huge issue. Interestingly enough, it's not an issue that I knew about as quickly as I should have. Heidi Heitkamp was talking about this over a year ago, and she wasn't getting any traction. And it was because of a meeting that I had with some folks in Missoula that some urban Native Americans came to, similar to this, not quite as big, but similar to this, that they talked about the fact back in July or August of last year or the year before, I can't remember which now because time goes, but there was 50 people missing from the first year, 50 women missing, of which one had been found, and that person they found was dead. We've got to do better. And the other issue I will just tell you, and this falls in the lands of the Native Americans, when I brought the folks in and I said, so a person comes up missing, what happens? They told me a couple things that were pretty demoralizing. Number one, they said, people don't take us seriously. When we report a person from missing, the first question they ask is, how many times has she gone missing before? Instead of gathering the troops together and start going after it. The second thing is, and this is something that can be fixed, I said, what about the federal officials? They said, we don't trust them. We don't trust the U.S. Marshal Service. When I was a fifth grader, until the policeman came to my classroom and said, look, I'm not against you, I'm on your side. I'm here to protect you. That information needs to get back out. If there is a conflict between the U.S. Marshal Service and Native Americans, that cannot happen. That needs to be fixed, absolutely unequivocally. It's a multifaceted issue, but I think, once again, it can be fixed as long as we get good communication between the different agencies. As far as wild lands and wildlife in general, with maybe the exception of Alaska, there's no place like this state in the lower 48. I'm not even close. And you're at the kind of tip of the spear here in Gallatin County. When people figure this place out, they're going to come. When they figure out that the winters aren't as bad as the summers are on the East Coast, they're going to come. Right? And quite frankly, they're coming. And we just need to make sure that those landscapes are around, not only for our wildlife, but for our kids too. And it's one of the reasons why the Land and Water Conservation Fund is so important, to get it funded and funded appropriately. Why? Because I think these ecosystems will be gone in 10 or 20 years. It's why the Yellowstone Gateway Bill to stop a mine at the headwaters of the Yellowstone River, which is an amazing valley that they call Paradise Valley for a reason, is going to be held on. And I believe Lucky Minerals just struck out here earlier today on what they own.
I'm Tom Rogers in Bozeman. I have a question on op-ed last week in the Chronicle. You know, I appreciate what you have to say, but I think you're a little bit short on solutions. And the Democrats are going to be able to win the election in 2020.
Yep.
You just can't get there by criticizing Trump because you're going to be the ones in power.
Right.
So I made the suggestion or question to you about 3-4 times, but I really had to answer. You know, one of the reasons why we have 1.2 million people coming into the United States illegally now, all claiming asylum, is that they can get a job, turn in some phony paperwork, and no one's held responsible. The employer isn't responsible. He says, well, I got this piece of paper here. I don't look at it. So what I'm asking you, Senator Tester, is would you support some kind of a bill where they phase in employment verification, re-verify over a period of time? We don't want to put people out of business, you know, but we got to get back to a legal workforce, and that's what I think is one issue that needs to be dealt with, and I haven't heard anyone talk about it recently.
You will right now. Thanks. It's a good question. E-Verify, we've supported in the past and we'll support again. What E-Verify does, by the way, is it makes the employers make sure the people they hire have the proper paperwork. If they don't, they don't hire them. It's pretty simple, okay? But we've gotten some pushback from the business community. Rightfully so, they need these folks, but the truth is that they need to be here in the same way that our ancestors came, hopefully most of them, and that is with the proper paperwork. Okay, if they're not, it's a problem. There's some other things we can do. We've got visa overstays up the kazoo. We make people jump through all sorts of hoops to get across the border, and then when they get here and their visa runs out, we don't ask them to go back, and we should. And by the way, this isn't just an issue with the southern border. There's just as many with the northern border. We've got to have better work done on watching the visa oversight so that when those visas run out, you go back home. The third thing that deals with the asylum seekers. The judges, we need to have more of them, not less of them, and they need to be closer to the border. Why? So that they can be adjudicated much quicker. It'd be much more humane than to do it the way it does now, which takes a year and a half or 2 years, which is ridiculous. The fourth thing I'll tell you now, this is the Democrat telling you these things, so we need to take a look at the push factor. And what the hell is a push factor? The push factor is what's causing these people to come here to begin with. And in Guatemala, Nicaragua, El Salvador, I can tell you for sure, that crime is a part of it, but another part of it is food. These guys are hungry. Now look, I live 75 miles from the northern border. My family was starving to death and up north looked better. I'm going to do something, okay? I'm not just going to sit there and watch my kids starve to death. And that's what these people are faced with. So why don't we raise food here. We actually raise a lot of really good food in Montana. Why don't we do some direct aid for food to get into these folks and help them? I can't imagine that a mother and a daughter, a mother and a son from Guatemala, for example, is looking forward to a 3 or 4 week hike through Mexico where you can get bit and stung and poked by everything under the world, and to come to this country. So let's try to do that. We did that in Colombia, by the way, and it worked. And I'm not saying just hand them a bucket full of cash. I'm saying do targeted aid, really focused on hunger. That's what this country does so well.
Hi, John, and thank you so much for all of your support for ending violence against women. Not only your co-sponsoring and voting to renew those acts, but also the new one that I just saw that you co-sponsored, and I can't look at it on my phone. Could you just name the one about No Longer Invisible?
Well, I mean, the key is with all the violence against women issues, and I don't know if I'm going to address the bill you're talking about specifically, but it's making sure, number one, that we don't tolerate this stuff, that we have law enforcement talking together, and we catch the bad guys, we punish them the full extent of the law. And I really think that's what we need to do. And quite frankly, there's, you don't know how many people I run into in Montana that say, it's not an issue. Oh my God, it is an issue. It's a huge issue. Everybody said, well, it's because of the Bakken. Well, the Bakken has been tempered down because of oil prices the last few years. It's still a huge issue. It's still happening every day. And it's something that, you want to talk about law enforcement in Indian country, it's one of the reasons I think they target Indian country is because Northern Cheyenne, for example, has just got a handful of police officers to cover an area that's huge. It's a huge area. So,
thank you. And my specific question is, based on the fact that the NRA is holding the Violence Against Women Act hostage in some of our minds, I'm wondering how you see the way forward in the Senate, where the pressure is on all senators to not support the renewal.
Look, I think that what's critically important here is that people speak. And it doesn't take much to bring up your computer and send off an email to your delegation saying, I think this is important. They've tried to pass it several times and leave Native Americans out. I think that's a mistake. Pass it, keep the Native American component in, and move forward. And I think that it's passed before, and it can pass again. I bet folks tell me, you know, it doesn't do any good to contact my elected officials. Only if you don't like the type is that true. Truthfully. And I would say pick up the phone or send an email. That's the best way because, quite frankly, it doesn't cost much. And you can get direct contact. I can't speak for everybody else, but I got a notion it's probably the same with them. I mean, we look at those things. I get a report from my staff every week and sometimes every day on what's going on, what people are talking about, what they're concerned about. And it's an important part of the job.
John, this is a thank you on a local issue. A number of folks in this community came together and helped save, through an organization called Save Our Gallatin Front, the last roadless ecosystem and drainage back in this Gallatin Front. The thank you is that your staff helped us get the 501c3 status for that very quickly after it had been pushed back again for quite a while. So two things you said. Number one, the wild area, but number two, what your staff can do and contacting y'all.
Yeah.
Because what you did with that is help us here locally to save something here, but you could do it back there. Thank you very much.
You bet. And that isn't done. We help where there's folks. I mean, I believe in underground collaboratives. I believe the folks on the ground should be helping create policy moving forward. But if you take a look at the Yellowstone Giveaway Protection Act, that wasn't my idea. I met with some folks in the library in Livingston, Montana, and it was five or six folks that laid out what's going on. My staff jumped on it, fleshed it out, got some more information, got it to me, and we got on board. And the truth is that we did that because it was good for business, and it was good for business in this state. By the way, it's also good for business in other places, too. But the truth is, those small businesses up and down that valley, without that protection, they would lose any equity they had. And this is good, clean fun, man. This is like selling fishing poles and going out and hiking in the mountains. And it's good stuff.
Thank you for being so bipartisan. I come from Chicago, and it's refreshing to see the way you're able to work.
Oh, well, thanks. Ron's a bad way.
Mayor, with the 2017 Montana Climate Assessment done at MSU, if other folks aren't, it's really worth delving into showing what's happening in our state.
Yeah.
And so as a Citizens Climate Lobby volunteer, the Energy Innovation Act is now been introduced in the House in January.
Yeah.
Somehow we have to get it to the Senate. Absolutely, what you say is true.
Yeah.
Get going individually.
Yeah.
But any tips for getting through the quagmire?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the most effective lobbyists that there are out there aren't the ones that get paid.
Right.
They're the ones that are my neighbors and that live here in Montana. And I think that you can use your ability to contact us to be able to get across. Look, I'm telling you that we could talk about this issue literally all day long because it's just that important. I mean, it's that important. If you take a look at what China's doing in the world right now, and they're doing a lot of stuff that scared the hell out of you. A lot of stuff in the Arctic now, because now the Arctic isn't the Arctic anymore. And they're doing just some really bad stuff, and it's all based on food. It's all based on food. And quite frankly, that's what happens. I think, this is my opinion, as a dirt farmer, not as a military strategist, but I think a lot of what's happening in the Middle East all has to do with population displacement due to starvation.
First thing I want to do is commend you for withstanding the onslaught from Trump and his half-wit son to win re-election. Second thing is that I'm from Tennessee, as you know, and they did not do the Medicaid. 14 rural hospitals have closed in Tennessee. And the reason healthcare is controversial is I'm from Nashville. There have been fortunes made in Nashville on for-profit everything to do with healthcare. The reason there's no change is too many people are making money off of it. And the last comment is this. With all else that everybody has that are important, nothing is more important than winning this next election in 2020. And it infuriates me to read the New York Times this morning that the Democratic Party is concerned and worried and trying to do a Stop Sanders campaign. That's idiocy in my opinion. So anyway, I want you to take that back to D.C. and say, that's not good.
Yeah. So thanks. I will tell you that Bernie and I got elected at the same time, okay? He got elected out of Vermont in 06. I got elected out of Montana. One thing about Bernie, he says the same thing in caucus as he does on the stump today. I'm not aware of anybody. Look, the Democratic Party is a big tent, okay? The same people that would want to stop Bernie would want to stop somebody like Michael Bennett, a different group, okay? So I wouldn't put a lot of stock in that. But I do want to tell you, you're spot on. I think that part of the problem with change, whether it's on climate change or whether it's on healthcare or any number of other things, has to do with money and follow the money. And I think you're right. The problem with Montana is we're just over a million people, and we need to increase affordability, increase access, not decrease it, because that's not going to help with affordability if we do increase access. So I appreciate it. Hopefully I got to the stuff you got. Thanks for your comments, and I appreciate your kudos.
Hi, my name is Bjorn. I manage a mid-sized organic farm here in Bozeman.
Damn, we love you.
And I would like to know what I can do or who you can connect me with to make it easier for local farmers to sell to large grocery stores like Safeway, Albertsons. Because I've been jumping through their hoops since January and spent over $5,000, which is a lot of money to us, just to get to the insurance that they were requesting.
Yeah.
And that's on top of everything else. We already provide food to town and country and a lot of other grocery stores. So
yeah.
I'm wondering, how can you help local mid-sized farmers like myself sell food to large corporations?
So I don't want to seem really, really cold here, but I happen to be in the same business you're in. And I will just tell you that those markets would be great to get into, but there are other markets that are just as good to get in. You got a co-op here that's probably the best in the state of Montana. And I would just say that this is willing buyer, willing seller. And if they don't want to buy what you got, I would go to where they want to buy it. And I really mean that. So, and I'm not speaking illy of Albertsons or Winco or anybody else. I don't know what they have in their organic section, but I hope they have a lot. But if they don't want to buy from you, they ain't going to buy from you. They just aren't. And if you can get a hold of the right purchase manager in there, you might be able to. But, I mean, trust me, you don't want the federal government coming in and saying you're going to buy X number of your products, be organic. What you want is you want the customer coming through the door and saying, if you don't have this stuff, we're not doing business here anymore. And then they'll start buying your stuff right away.
Senator, thank you for all you do for our veterans on behalf of the Vietnam Veterans of America. I'd appreciate any comments, updates you have on recent suicides. We've seen three veterans commit suicide on VA property
Yeah, that's right.
Within the last month, and some concerns about the VA moving forward to address those issues. Could you comment on that?
So, yeah, I appreciate the question. The suicide is a huge issue within the VA. It's a huge issue within our society, quite frankly. Montana happens to lead the country in suicide. If there's one issue you don't want to lead the country in, I'd say that's it. But we are where we are. So I'll talk about what we've been working on in the past, and we'll continue to work on it. It's about getting more psychiatric slots into Montana. We've been successful with that, but we need more. And we need more psychiatrists throughout the whole country, quite frankly. And we need the VA to get more aggressive in hiring. We've got too many open slots within VA Montana, and they need to get aggressive, and they need to hire them up. Whether it's general practitioners or whether it's psychiatrists, psychologists, family practitioners, whoever it might be. Why? Because when somebody gets in crisis and they pick up the phone, if they do pick up the phone, then you want somebody at the other end that knows what the hell they're doing, okay? The other thing is we've got to figure out, and there's some things in the service that are being done, the Yellow Ribbon Program, the Navy's got another one that's highly successful. We need to get those folks to share those programs with the other branches of the military and what basically do they educate the family. And the family is really the first point of contact on a lot of this stuff if somebody starts heading south with their mental health. And so that's what we've done in the past, and that's what we're going to continue to push. Myself and Senator Moran out of Kansas have introduced a bill that kind of is an all-hands-on-deck mental health bill that is designed after a lot of some things that have worked here in the state of Montana. For instance, Eureka has a situation where they use their, it's either American Legion Hall or VFW. I think it's a VFW hall. So when veterans get together, they can access by telehealth. If somebody's sitting there having a Coca-Cola and turns around to his buddy and says, you know, life ain't worth living, they can get somebody on telehealth that's a professional and sit there and talk to them and knock it out right then and right there. And so that's one thing. The other thing is it doubles down on bringing the community in more and more into the healthcare process. It's a huge issue within the VA. I think last count is about 20 veterans a day are committing suicide, and you're absolutely right. In the last 2 weeks, we've had 3 commit suicide on property. And the other thing is, by the way, is we've got to do better outreach to get as many of the veterans into the VA as we can. There's a lot of veterans that are sitting out there that got turned off by the VA back in the 70s, 80s. And it's a different VA now. It still has a lot of room for improvement, but it's a different VA than it was in the 70s and 80s, I guarantee it.
Hi, John. I kind of got 3 questions. First one, you voted for Obamacare. Now, I take this up. I'm not a registered Democrat or a registered Republican. My wife, she started her own business. Her health care went from $300 a month. Her premium now is over $900 a month. Her deductible was $2,000. Now it's over $7,500.
Yeah.
She finally had to cancel insurance. Did you know that when you passed Obamacare that these rates were going to go so high? Second question is, in Congress and Senate, you guys are not getting nothing done anymore. It's like a battle.
Okay.
I've seen where angel moms affected by illegals coming here that are bad. Now, not all of them are bad. And some of you guys won't even meet with the angel moms. And the third one is on the alternative energy. Now, I'm going to see a doctor over in Billings, and I drive by these solar farms that are out there. We need to do a better job of taking care of them because they're all pointed in the wrong directions, and they're full of snow, and they're not really collecting energy. We need to get smarter, but we also need to still have coal and oil.
Yep, so whoever put up that solar farm, if it isn't pointed in the right direction, it's going to be survival of the fittest. They're going to go broke. Truthfully. Angel moms, I will tell you, I'll meet with any of them that want to meet with me, and I've never had one ask. I'll just tell you that. But we'll meet with any of them. And in fact, folks want to meet with me, get a hold of me. If I'm here, I can do it. At a very minimum, my staff will meet with you. Which, by the way, as I tell folks that come back to D.C. and lobby, if you go into an office and you're lobbying, say, for Easter Seals, that's the last folks I told this to, and you don't get a chance to meet with the principal, don't take that as a slap in the face. Oftentimes it's better meeting with the principal because these guys are smart. They're really smart. No offense to myself. Okay? And the first one dealt with Obamacare and the skyrocketing costs of health care. I think there was a guy that brought up here in this general area about follow the money. And he's right. What was trying to be done with, by the way, the old health care system wasn't working. It isn't working. And if we go back to the old health care system, we're in no better shape. And I can tell you that because I've been without health care. I understand because it cost a lot in 1982, more than we could afford. What we tried to do with Obamacare, with the Affordable Care Act, was have it so insurance companies so there was more competition, okay? It worked in some areas, and some areas it didn't. We also tried to take care of folks with pre-existing conditions and folks that hit lifetime gaps. That pretty much worked. The question is, though, really on healthcare is, what do you want? Some folks will advocate for Medicare for all. Then there will be no insurance companies. And that's okay if that's what you want. That's what you should advocate for. But the Affordable Care Act was the best effort to try to do something to move forward. I would ask if your wife checked on the website to see if she could get lower prices. I would ask if she did any of that. Because quite frankly, I'm on the Montana website. And I did get a pretty decent deal. It still cost me more than I could afford, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't like a three-digit increase, I guarantee you that, three times increase. So there's all those things. But if anybody has a solution for healthcare that works, my ears are wide open, I will tell you that. Because you cannot have transferred costs within healthcare. None of these people don't have insurance. They go to the doctor and somebody else has to pay their bill. One of the things that happened to me when the whole Obamacare debate was going on, I was selling some wheat to Nebraska, believe it or not, Montana wheat going to Nebraska. And a bonafide over-the-road trucker, this is how he made his living, drove into my yard, and it was while the debate was going on. He said, I don't want your damn Obamacare. And I said, really? He said, nope. And I said, did you ever get sick? He said, never. Never been sick. I said, how long have you been driving trucks? He said, I've been driving truck for nearly 30 years. I said, you ever been in a wreck? Oh, yeah, I've been plenty of wrecks. You ever been hurt? Yeah, I broke my ankle once. I said, what'd you do? He says, I went to the emergency room. It was free there. So the truth is people have to have insurance. It has to be affordable. I feel your pain. And if it's not insurance, it's something else. That has to be affordable, too, from a taxpayer standpoint. Because one thing that doesn't work in your economy is if you have sick employees. That costs you a lot of money. And so it's important we try to apply common sense to the issue and move forward in a way that makes sense. And I was, as I said earlier, long before we had this meeting, if you've got ideas, I want to hear them. Because quite frankly, we need ideas on how to fix it. Because there's everything from soup to nuts. There's everything from take away everything and let them go to cradle to grave. Take care of you.
Even Jeff Sessions, a former member of Trump's cabinet, was here a few days ago, said he was questioning why we sent troops to Syria and why we helped shatter Libya and leave them with this terrible civil war. Now you're commendable in actively helping heal the soldiers that are coming home, but as a member of the Senate, you have the final say on these wars, but these presidents, Bush and Obama, did get these things going. Yeah. Now, are you willing to nip these wars in the bud so this solving things with blood and trauma will be stopped?
Yeah. Good question. I've never been a fan of what we did in the Middle East. I will tell you, we are there. I think you can take a look at what Mattis did, who, by the way, isn't arguably a good man. He was a good man. When the president said, we're just going to pull our troops out of Syria, he said, that can't happen. It will cause total chaos. And he said, no, we're pulling them out. Look, I am for getting the troops out of there in a measured way so that it doesn't cause a bigger problem than we have already. Absolutely. I think that what has happened over the last 20 years, and it's been nearly 20 years now, is we've created so many veterans that it's a cost of the war taking care of our veterans, that it's going to cost for my grandkids would pay for it. And so, yeah, I'm for pulling them out, but I'm not just for saying, let's just get the hell out of there and watch it go down the tubes. I got in a fight, by the way, and this won't help me with your answer to your question. When Obama was putting in the red line stuff, I said, this is crap. Don't be doing it. And so we challenge them all. I don't think it was right for the president, Trump, to say, well, we're just going to pull everybody out of it. I think it would have created far more problems than it was going to solve. Now, do I think we need to get out? Yep, we do need to get out. We've got to figure out how to empower Afghanistan. We need to figure out how to get the Syrian leader out of business to move forward.
Here with 2 8th graders from Headwaters Academy. And we
all left. Right.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. Really? I'd love to hear you talk about grizzly bears and about not only the successes and the good news, but also we're really interested in the more endangered populations up in the Yak, for example, and the Pacific Northwest Trail and the Southern Route. We don't want to see all those people going through habitat where there are just maybe 23, 24 bears and maybe 3 or 4 breeding females. So love to hear.
So I would just say, if you want to get folks fired up on one side or the other, talk about the Endangered Species Act, you'll get a human cry from both sides. We need to let science dictate. The last time I checked, the state animal was the grizzly, and we need to make sure that they have populations that are commensurate with the ecosystem that's there. But we also need to keep in mind that if they get in places they shouldn't be, they've got to be dealt with in a manner that makes sense. So grizzlies are an amazing animal. They're just an amazing animal. But in the wrong areas, they can do some damage. Now, I've got ranchers on the Rocky Mountain front. It'll tell you they walked out in the morning and they've seen grizzly bears eating right alongside their calves, eating a little grain. But those aren't the kind of stories you hear all the time with grizzly bears and cattle and sheep especially. So I just think you need to base it on science and base it on the numbers. And if they don't dictate removal of the endangered species list, then don't do it. If they do, then manage them like you do any other recovered species.
My name's Glenn Nagel. I'm a retired federal employee.
Yes.
And needless to say, I'm very distraught with what I've seen in this administration over the years, trying to eliminate or reduce federal benefits for federal employees, active and retired. Can you respond to that?
It's a promise that was made that we need to live up to. There's been federal employees have been playing politics with for the last number of years, and it's not the right thing to do. I think that if you take a look at the job that they do, and the last government shutdown is a prime example, who would want to come work for any agency within the agencies that were shut down very, very unnecessarily? So there are bills back there to make sure that the retirement system is firmed up. Just got to get them across the finish line.
A while back, there was an abortion bill.
Yeah, there was.
And I think you got some local pushback for your vote.
I did.
And I'm wondering if you would talk about that.
Yeah, well, killing babies is against the law. People go to jail for it. Live babies, can't do that. Now, we go from endangered species list to abortion, so I should quit right there, okay, because I got a little applause. But the truth is that from my perspective, and look, it's a very, very emotional issue. I wish we didn't have to deal with it at all. But the truth is, I'm not sure you want me making the decision for a woman who's been raped. So hopefully what happens in those kind of situations, and I know people that have been in those situations, that they have a conversation with their family and their minister and whoever else they trust, and they make the best decision. You gotta get the guy in the red hat out of the way.
Thanks, John. Congress having a lower approval rating than Ebola. I was wondering what your thoughts are on term limits.
Yeah, great question, and I appreciate it very, very much. And you're right, Ebola is a little ahead of us as far as... Look, to get to your question, I got elected to the state legislature, and bear with me a little bit, in 1998. My first session was 1999. Term limits had not been put into effect. And to be honest with you, I'm not so sure I didn't vote for them. But by 2001, they started to take effect, and by 2003, they were fully in effect. And I can tell you who the term limits empowered. It empowered lobbyists, and it empowered the executive branch, the governor's branch, in this particular case. And it pushed a lot of people out, broke up some cabals that probably needed to be broke up, quite frankly. But it pushed some people out that really had a history of what had gone on in the legislature. For example, I remember J.D. Lynch, Tom Tow, those kind of guys saying, well, you know, you come up, you have this great idea, you know, I want to put this bill in. And they'd look at you and say, it didn't work 10 years ago, and here's why. And they would go down the list. Now, you put the bill in if you want, have the debate. The fact is, they had already been there, done that, and knew that. And so I do think there's a moment in time where you found out where all the bathrooms were, and if you haven't made the change you want to make, it's time to move on. But I'm not sure that should be done by anybody other than the voters.
Yeah.
By the way, just for a point of interest, when I got elected to the U.S. Senate in 2007, I was number 100. We're just a little past 12 years, I am number 32. So two-thirds of the people that I served with are gone in the last 12 years.
Would you give us an update on what's happening on prescription drugs and what can happen?
Yeah, what can happen is we can make it so that the prescription drug companies increase the price of a prescription drug or even put a new prescription drug on the market, that they have to tell you why they're charging the price they charge. more transparency. Now, why is this important? We all know it costs a lot of money to develop a prescription drug. There is no doubt about that. And if they're using private dollars, I really can't debate it, the fact that they've got to get that investment back. But if they're using dollars from the National Institute of Health, which is taxpayer dollars, then I got a problem with that, because the taxpayers, in essence, will be paying for it twice. The second thing that I hope happens is that we have a bill, I've got a bill, I should say, that will require pharmaceutical companies to turn their pills over to generic manufacturers as soon as the patent runs out. Why? Because then that generic company can build that pill, sell it for far less than what the name brands would do, and we get that advantage in the ecosystem of healthcare. So those are two things that come to mind right off. There's probably more than that could be done, but it isn't coming up on my database.
Can you speak to what we can do as voters beyond voting to ensure that we get a new administration next year?
So first of all, let me make this clear. If you don't vote, it don't matter what you do. People have to vote. And people vote in Montana. We just have to make sure that people vote. Vote for the person you think has done the best job. And I think that's really important. I think the other thing is get the facts out.
And
then you get, if the election goes as you hope, or I hope, or the guy in the red hat hopes, then the truth is that administration goes forward and you encourage them to appoint the best people they can to fill up the different agencies that are out there. But I don't want to short sail this. I think getting out and talking to your neighbors is important. Getting out and writing letters to the editor is important. Getting out and trying to squash some of the stuff that's on the internet is important. Oh, but the truth of the matter is where it really comes down, where the rubber hits the road, is going to that booth and voting. Before voting, it's letters to the editor, it's talking to your friends, talking to your relatives, the one that'll talk to you, and making sure that people understand that the democracy works when people vote. And there's a lot of people out there, by the way, that want to suppress the vote. They want to make it so impossible for people to vote. In this state, in Indian country, it's really big, but it's in every state. It's in Montana, too. So getting out there and making sure that people have access to voting is really important. It's just really important. And people don't, look, I've heard it from my family members. It doesn't do any good to vote in Montana. Alone. It does good to vote no matter where you're at. And democracies work. If we had everybody vote, there'd be different officials. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I want to thank you for being here and being visible. And I was born and raised in rural Reese Creek. And over the past 22 years, I've watched the climate change. In the last 22 years, I've never seen an average year in the world because they've all been above average.
That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, and you mentioned migrants coming here, and I think it's important to know that they are coming here from climate change, from food shortages, from all of, like, hurricanes, everything that's happening in the world. And the Green New Deal is the only resolution out there that addresses climate change adequately enough in the timeline that scientists have given us. And I'm wondering if you'll support the Green New Deal, and if not, what is your plan to give my generation its future that is being rapidly stolen from us?
We can go into the issues around climate change. I think most of it is solved by putting resources at the issue in the form of research and development. I think that if you take a look at, when I was going to college, they had a wind farm. I went to school in Great Falls, outside of Great Falls. That wind farm blew up. The wind blew so damn hard there, it literally blew the generators apart. Well, now we've made progress, right? So you can tether the blades so it doesn't, wind can blow hard and you can still create the energy. And they become much more efficient, they become much lighter. You can say the same thing for solar. It's not gonna be long, not very long at all, but we're gonna be shingling our houses with solar panels. That's a very, very good thing. And move forward in that way. I do want to address your question, though, and that was if I support the Green New Deal. I support the fact that we need to have a debate on climate change. There are other things in the Green New Deal that I just can't support. In other words, a job, period. You get a job. If I'd have been in high school and somebody had said, no matter what you do, no matter how much alcohol you drink, no matter how bad you've done to your community, you get a job, that just doesn't work for me. There's got to be motivation to go out there and get that Bachelor of Science in Music, or become that backhoe operator, or that sheetrocker, or that MD. And I think that's really important. So the issues that she had put in about climate, I think we need to have that debate to find out what's appropriate. What I always tell folks is that I still farm, and when I pull up to that fuel tank, I don't like pumping 200 gallons of diesel fuel in my tractor to go seed like I'm going to do tomorrow. But the truth is, I don't have any other option. Give me options. And that's what our research and development will do. So, kind of yes. Kind of no.
Senator, we have time for one more question.
One more question. This guy with a mustache in the second row has been had his hand up from the beginning, and he's been very patient.
Thank you, Senator Tester. I want to follow up on the one specific health thing. That is that too many Americans with type 2 diabetes are rationing their insulin.
Yeah.
And we're seeing deaths.
Yeah.
There are two major manufacturers of insulin, Eli Lilly and Santos. You gave Eli Lilly an enormous, huge tax break.
Where was that at?
Through the
tax bill.
The tax bill.
I didn't vote for that. We'll go ahead.
Okay. Eli Lilly is paying zero taxes in 2018. Santos and Eli Lilly have increased their price of insulin over seven times since the last 5 years. We're seeing Americans die because they can't afford insulin.
And insulin hasn't changed.
And insulin hasn't changed in 30 years.
Right.
This is not America. Yeah. This is not America.
So you're right, and it's one of the reasons that we brought the bill up to have them justify price increases. And so,
they're already there.
I know, but we can help drive them back too. I think we can. Look, I've got a friend, my best friend in life, lives in Seattle right now. 12 years old, he was diagnosed with diabetes. In my phone somewhere, I've got what he paid for insulin in 1969. And it is, best, my best recollection, about 25 times higher today than it was in 1969. Now, he doesn't have a fancy delivery system. He doesn't have those pens or the pouch or nothing. He just pokes a needle in his leg and takes an injection. But the fact that it's increased that much and it's the same drug it was in 1969 is ridiculous, and it goes back to what this guy talked about, follow the money. But the truth is, not only insulin, and insulin's not a diabetes, but it's happening with blood pressure. It's happening with a lot of issues revolving around cancer. It needs to be solved. And quite frankly, people need to be talking about it. And I'm glad you brought it up today, because it's a huge issue. Thanks. Yeah, by God, it's been an hour.
Yeah, you gotta go.
So before I turn it over to my favorite assistant deputy mayor in the state of Montana, I just want to say thank you all very much for being here today. Thank you for your questions. If you had your hand up, and I know there was a lot of people that had hands up that never got to a question, go to my website and put your question in. Call my office. If you don't get a person, leave a voicemail, put your question in. We'll get back to you. We started out this thing. We had a person over here that talked about my staff. I'm very proud of my staff. They are an extension of me. If they screw up, they get fired, truthfully. We don't fire very many people because they don't screw up. But the truth is, if you have questions, don't be afraid to go into my office here in Bozeman. If you're from Helena, go there. If you're in Butte, go there. Wherever you're from, Billings, go there. And tell us what the issue is. It's really, really important. In closing, I just want to say thank you very much. This is very helpful. Thank you for your hospitality. Thank you for your courtesy. God bless you all.
You have just heard a town hall meeting with senior Montana Democratic Senator John Tester, recorded at the historic Baxter Hotel in Bozeman, Montana, on April 16, 2019. This has been a Beyond the Deep End production, recorded and produced by Joy LeClaire for Gallatin Valley Community Radio. It is archived on kgvm.org. We thank you for listening and for supporting your community radio station, 95.9 FM, KGVM Bozeman.